I'm Macy Chen.
And I'm David Ball.
You're listening to CFRO, The Pulse, here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
We are your independent daily news show, reporting on the front lines in our community.
And we're streaming at thepulse.coopradio.org.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, August the 11th. And today, we're delving into a massive upsurge of cases of COVID in the province, the number rising by almost 40% over the last week of cases, as bad as they've been since May the 17th. We'll hear the latest announcement about why these cases have spiked and what we need to do to get them back down from Dr. Bonnie Henry, the provincial health officer, and from Adrian Dix, the health minister, after our news today. And we'll hear a bit about a rally planned for Saturday by the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users after a record-breaking paramedic response to overdoses and 2 months of record deaths. And now for our news headlines. Drug users in the downtown east side and advocates are preparing for a rally on Saturday. The event comes after BC paramedics said that the number of overdoses they responded to last month were record-breaking numbers. That follows two previous months that both shattered records for the number of overdose deaths in the province. Saturday's event is organized by the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users, or VANDU, and will be at the corner of Main and Hastings at noon on Saturday. Under the banner this year, "We Speak Their Names, We March with Rage." The event's Facebook page says that the Memorial March will recognize all of those that we've lost to the war on drugs and the war on the poor. If possible, wear a mask if you're attending. Here's Angel Gates, a member of Haida Nation and a drug user activist. She's with Megaphone Magazine's Speaker Bureau and lives in the downtown east side, who spoke to SFU Public Square for their online event, A Tale of Two Crises, COVID-19 and the Overdose Emergency.
Nobody ever asks us what we need. You know, like, the government's not coming and saying, well, what is it you think you need to better the situation? Like, drug users are dying so fast. I think people just need to know we're people too. You know, I live downtown. I have 3 kids. I work. You know, I have a dog. If we could come out of the shadows and stop hiding, less of us would be dying. You know, so it would be great to have a safe supply so our people could live.
The rally comes as the Canadian Association of Safe Supply nonprofit adding to demands that the province increase the safe supply of heroin and other drugs to save lives. Canada should look to Europe, where people are allowed to take home doses of more drug, and also to support the new company Fair Price Pharma's bid to produce medical-grade safe heroin. That company is headed by Dr. Perry Kendall, the previous provincial health officer, and the lead researcher behind NAOMI, the heroin-assisted treatment trial, Dr. Martin Schechter. The Canadian Association of Safe Supply wants the province to jump on board with that, as well as expand the drugs that the dual risk program allows people to take home and use. It's time for the provincial government to take that next step and expand pharmacare coverage for injectable opioids like heroin. Now, in COVID-19 news, the provincial numbers have taken a turn far for the worse in the past week, rising from 278 a week ago up to 445 cases of the coronavirus yesterday. That's a 40% increase over the week and as bad as the numbers have been since May the 17th. Welcome back. You're listening to The Pulse on CFRO 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio. You can find all of our podcasts and previous interviews at thepulse.coopradio.org or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. On today's show, we'll listen to Dr. Bonnie Henry, the provincial health officer, as well as Health Minister Adrian Dix, on why we've seen a 40% increase of COVID cases across the province in just the last week, reaching highs not seen since May the 17th, despite months of efforts to control and rein in the coronavirus.
We need to do better collectively to stop these exposure events from happening. Our layers of protection reduce the spread of COVID-19. We know that works. We know we can do it. We help all of us stay safe, whether we're at work, at school, out with friends. What I can tell you is that parties and gatherings with young people that you, many of whom you don't know, even if there are fewer than 50 people, are a concern. And we have seen that. We saw that on the July 1st long weekend. We've seen it across the province where people have been coming together and having group gatherings with different people and not maintaining distances, safe distances from people they don't know. This is because people are often inside and in close contact with crowds of people that they don't know for several hours. And we've had a little bit of some work being done by teams across the province to ensure that some of these parties have been broken up, including there have been some fines levied on some as well. We know that when alcohol is involved for many, the precautions that we would normally take can diminish. So if your friends invite you to a party and it doesn't feel right, don't go. There's no better excuse than a global pandemic to be able to do the right thing and encourage your friends to do the right thing too. As well, we need to remind people that these are there, these guidance and these documents, these orders that are in place are for all of our protection and for protection of our community here in BC. And so when people are traveling here, if you're visiting from other provinces or from out of country and you finished your quarantine, do not ask people to break these rules. They are there for the safety of everybody in establishments like restaurants and bars and other places. We need to be in this together. We need to keep our group small, and we need to support each other in keeping these layers of protection in place. We are in a time when we know people can unknowingly spread the virus to others, particularly young people who are feeling well and may quite easily spread it. And these are why these precautions we take right now are important for all of us. And these next 2 weeks will again be critical for us. We need to hold our line and bend our curve back down where it belongs. As we increase our time with others and restart activities across BC, I know that spending more time with others can be a source of anxiety for many. And that's why we have to pay attention. In particular, I know parents and families are worried about the restart of in-class learning in the fall. This anxiety, this fear, this not knowing what it's going to look like in the face of a global pandemic is perfectly normal. We are all feeling that, and I understand that. Schools will look different. We have to put aside what classes were like in March or even in June, and we learn from what we know from about this virus and about how it spreads and about things that we can do around the world. It's important to remember that the layers of protection we use at work, at grocery stores, in restaurants, will also be used in our schools. That is part of the plan. They are the foundation and the backstop for all of us. Limiting the time with others, using one-way pathways, cleaning more, washing hands regularly, and always, always, always staying home if we're unwell are important measures that will be used in our schools every day. Reducing the numbers of people in the school, and that's, you know, parents and others who would normally come in, staggering times, use of distances, keeping groups smaller, making sure that the number of people who are in a group are maxed at a certain number, using masks when it's appropriate. These are all things that we will be doing in our schools. But we need to come together locally and make the framework that we've given out work for all our children in our local situations. And that work is being done now. And parents can be involved in that. The back to school plan has been developed to ensure that these layers are there. Like for every other sector, we've worked with the Ministry of Education, with teachers, with parents, with school districts, to have a framework that every school then needs to adapt to its own situation, its own community. And that is what is happening now. Each school and school district is now taking the overall framework with the guidance in place and applying it to their schools. This will ensure the layers of protection are there from the first day to the last day of the school year. You will see such things as staggered start times, staggered recesses and lunches. And we talk about the layer of learning groups. That means that it may be that two or three classes all start at the same time and have recess at the same time. It doesn't mean that all of those children will be intermingling every day. It means they may go for recess at the same time, but they'll be in different areas of the schoolyard. We will be looking at the important innovative things that teachers and parents and schools have been thinking about outside classrooms, about how they can increase ventilation, how they can safely have smaller groups, and how we can have physical distancing, and in particular making sure that we're not having physical contact on a regular basis, particularly for young children. So each school district and school will be developing their own COVID safety plan within the framework, and that's what parents and teachers and the rest of us will be looking for in the coming weeks. We need to work together, and we need to use all of those great ideas that are out there to make sure that this is safe. It is that important for our children and for the future that we are able to manage this and make sure that our children get what they need in their education system coming into the next year. Because this virus is going to be with us, and we need to be able to manage it and support our children. COVID-19 has created incredible uncertainty and concern, and all of us feel that. But let's not forget, we have shown how to slow the spread of this virus, and we know we can keep our communities safe. It's about monitoring closely, minimizing, doing our part to minimizing the risks, managing the number of new cases, and that's something that we do in public health with you, modifying our actions as needed. We will be flexible as we move forward, and we will learn from every outbreak, every encounter we have. This is what will keep us safe and protect the people that we care for and protect those most at risk, particularly our seniors and elders. So let's keep going. Let's all do our best every day, each and every day. And let's also continue to be kind, to be calm, and to be safe.
When we talk about younger people, we're talking about people between 20 and 39. And so I think it's not fair to describe or ascribe all that to youth. There are people in those categories with lots of experience who are struggling with this. Nor is it fair, and we don't do this, to blame those who have tested positive. There are people who may have gone to parties that didn't test positive, that aren't sick. And their circumstances and the circumstances of those who are should be the subject of care and not the subject of scorn. But that said, we do need to continue, and as we've noted before, to take action, the very actions that are required. Some of that will require enforcement, and you've seen some of that over the weekend. Some of that will require all of us reaching out to the people we know, and some of it will involve our individual actions, our saying no to going to private parties of a sort where we don't know everybody, and saying no to organizing such parties. And I think that's something that we can help each other with in the community. And to do that, we are and will be finding people on social media and influencers. But I want to say to everyone out there, we are all influencers. And we can all influence the behavior of ourselves, first of all, but of the people around us, and how we behave, how we say no respectfully to behavior that is unwise in the context of a pandemic and goes contrary to the advice of Dr. Henry, is an important way that all of us can participate in stopping the spread. In closing, I want to say this, that our task this summer was to renew BC without rebooting the virus. Our number of new cases is climbing, and it's climbing to levels that we haven't seen in a number of months. The number of people now in self-isolation is disturbing. While some increase was expected, each of us knows our numbers are too high. And we probably think that 10 is too high, but certainly approximately 44 a day is too high. And that by doing so, we have the potential of undoing the work we've all done. And that while people may think that these things aren't linked to vulnerable people, in fact, we know that they are. There are about 150,000 people who work in our healthcare system, 47,000 people who work in long-term care. If there's more community transmission, inevitably, it's going to affect people who work in healthcare, who work with some of our most vulnerable people in societies. And that's why we have to make sure we're still 100% committed when it's just us out by ourselves buying groceries, stopping in at a coffee shop or running errands in local stores. We must make sure we're 100% committed when it's with those in our bubble and we're getting together in our homes, in our parks, or our restaurants. We have to be committed to taking the actions you need to take, following the advice of public health officials, following the advice of Dr. Henry, and doing the right thing. We've all got to use our COVID sense. We need to use it every day. We need to say enough to private parties where alcohol is being used, that where physical distancing is impossible. We simply have to say enough. And if those we care about need a reminder, or we encounter somebody who's not using their COVID sense, that's when we use our COVID courtesy to kindly and firmly help them stop the spread too. In our BC fight, we count on each other. Right now, each of us has to use the influence we have, the trust we've earned, and the bonds we've built with family and friends to reach out and make sure that across BC, we're all recommitting to the behavior that works. Use our COVID sense, show our COVID courtesy, stop the spread. When we let our guard down, we invite COVID-19 into our homes. It's time to take in that welcome mat. We're happy to take your questions.
First question is from Ian Bailey, Globe and Mail.
Question to Dr. Henry. Given the latest numbers from Health Canada that they show that the BC and Nova Scotia are leading the country in increases in cases among young people, I'm wondering why BC is not flat out requiring masks in classes and whether that will change.
Yeah, I'm not sure I see the connection between the young people in their 20s and 30s who we're seeing now contract the illness and wearing masks in classes. And I will say that none of the provinces have required masking of all students in classes. And there's very little evidence that that is a measure that's going to protect people. We know that there is a place for masks. They are the point, the end of our hierarchy of controls, the layers that we need, the least effective of the layers that we need. So I absolutely believe there's a role for masks in places in our school setting, particularly for teachers and administrators when they cannot maintain distances in particular. But we also know that masks can interfere with the ability to learn. So I think there's a lot more that we need to understand. But right now, the role of masks in our schools will be in those settings where we cannot maintain physical distancing within things like hallways sometimes and settings like that for older children. So that's what we will continue to do, and we'll continue to evaluate and reevaluate and learn as we go.
Do you have a follow-up, Ian?
Yeah, absolutely. Are you confident that youngsters will be able to sort of properly use masks in the chaos of the school system? Later on that, I know the BCTF is pushing for more masking in schools.
Yeah, so I think that's one of the things that we need to do right now is socialize the use of masks and help our children understand where and when they use them and how to use them properly. And that is something that I know young people in my life were working on. And it is a challenge. And certainly, to think of particularly a young child, 10, 11, 12, sitting all day in a classroom with a mask on is probably not realistic. There's lots of things that we can do to make those environments safe without requiring somebody to sit with a mask on for the long periods of time. So that's what we'll be looking at. We are looking, of course, to making sure that we're following all of the data on transmission in children and on use of masks in children, and we'll continue to adapt and to adjust as we go forward.
Next question is from Richard Zussman, Global News.
Dr. Henry, one of the things that we hear a lot about around return to school are grandparents who participate in the day-to-day caring of children. What are your advice towards grandparents who are looking at a return to September? They're worried about their own health. Should they continue to be part of after or before school care or part of the care network associated with a child?
Yeah, and again, you know, these are very difficult questions to answer for everybody. But the short answer is yes, if you're part of that child's bubble and have been playing that role, then you as a family need to make sure that you're doing it in the safest way possible. We are putting in place the health measures to make sure schools are safe, to reduce the possibility of transmission in those settings, and we are confident that we know how to manage it should anybody come to school with COVID-19. Grandparents need to look at their own risk. They play such an important role in children's lives, and it supports families. We've heard this from many, many families that that before and after care from grandparents. But then we may need to think about, okay, what is it that I do at work? Maybe we need to reduce our social bubble. Maybe our children don't go to other activities outside of the school setting so that we reduce our overall risk as a family. So those are the things that individually families have to think about.
Do you have a follow-up, Richard?
I do. Just on this issue around masks, where do you believe that it will be appropriate in a school setting to have masks? And can you explain a little bit more? I've heard a lot of feedback since your comments last week around physical distancing in terms of what alterations can be made in the classroom, especially when there's fixed space and fixed desks that could allow for a semblance of physical distancing inside of a classroom.
Yeah, so there's lots of things that we know around how this virus is transmitted in those settings. So there's the way people are sitting, which way they're facing, whether they have distance between them, the types of activities you're doing. So every setting is different, but there are opportunities for schools to look at that. It obviously, it's reflected in numbers in classrooms. It's reflected in the ability to remove a lot of stuff that may be in classrooms, so minimizing the amount of other things that are in the classroom, furniture, etc. Looking at ventilation and how to improve ventilation. I think masking is really important in those situations where particularly adults are getting together, or older children are in situations where they can't maintain at least a meter distance. You know, and those are the types of things that every school will have to look at. There is a role for masks, absolutely, but they are, as I've said, sort of one of the layers of protection that we have, and we're building in many layers. And I think there's been a lot of confusion about the term that we've been using of cohorts or learning groups, and the fact that some people believe that means they're going to have close contact with 60 people every day, which is not the concept at all. It's maximizing the number of people over the semester or the whole year that children will have contact with. And that includes, you know, all of the children and the staff in that sort of maximum number. So for most schools, it'll be much smaller than that. But that does give ability to stagger groups of classes together, for example, so that you're able to stagger arrival times and resets and lunches and make it work on outside classes, for example. And we need to, there's lots of great ideas that I've been hearing both from teachers and principals and parents about how to do some really neat, innovative things that will help children. Things like having outdoor classes, like looking at how they can have safe interactions in smaller groups, socially distant or physically distanced. So I think there's a lot of learning that we can take from other countries on how they've done this safely. And I will also reflect that what happens in schools reflects what's happening in our communities. And that's why all of us have to pay attention to what we're doing to keep our communities safe. Where we've seen large outbreaks or numbers of both staff and students get sick in school settings, it's when there's been high numbers in the community as well. And so we need to do our bit over the next few weeks to make sure that our children, because of the importance of getting back into that in-classroom learning for a whole variety of reasons, that we're able to do that in every community here in BC.
Marcella Bernardo, News 1130.
Hi, Dr. Henry. Just in keeping with what's happened in recent weeks with large parties, now that three Vancouver police officers have tested positive for the virus after breaking up a large house party downtown, and it's obvious that these gatherings are still happening, do you believe enough is being done to stop them And what more can be done to ensure your public safety orders are actually being enforced?
Yeah, I know it's very challenging, and as you know, we always start with the carrot versus the stick, and I continue to believe that if we tell people why it is so important and we put in the parameters where we know things are going wrong, and we've seen that, we've had more enforcement in those settings that we have control over, and we do know that law enforcement and bylaw officers, the order around 50 is something that can lead to fines, and in addition to nuisance behavior and noise complaints and other behaviors. So I know my colleagues in public health are working with their municipal public safety communities to put together approaches that help support us stopping these types of gatherings that put our whole communities at risk.
Back to the school situation, some statistics up from the United States, I think it was today or yesterday, show a 40% increase in the number of COVID-19 infections amongst children, which is obviously quite high. Does that give you any pause for thought or re-examining what's going to be happening here?
Yeah, and you know, this reflects, and I've read that study in some detail, and it does not surprise me. It concerns me immensely. I will also say that that's still very low numbers. So the percentage of children who are ill and who get this virus is still much less than their respective proportion in the population. And we see the same thing here. We'll be presenting some more information on that. But what it does is it reflects what I've been saying, that schools are and transmission in school settings are a reflection of what's happening in your community. And we know that in many communities across the U.S., there is still very high levels of community transmission with thousands of cases a day in many communities. And when schools open without having safety measures in place, which we have seen in many communities, then they can become a place where transmission happens widely. Even in those situations, though, what we've seen is when the school identifies people, they identify people who are positive, they remove them from that situation, and there's a couple of examples in the state of Georgia, for example, where the schools have closed for a short period of time. They've isolated the contacts, and then they've reopened. So it is something that reflects the challenges that are going on in communities across the U.S. and why I'm so insistent that the importance of education and the education system for supporting children, whether it's social supports, psychosocial supports, access to medical care, access to food, access to all kinds of supports in our classroom system, is dependent on all of us continuing to do what we're doing to keep our numbers low, to keep that transmission low, so that it is safe in all of our communities and we can open our schools and support our children.
And that was Dr. Bonnie Henry, the Provincial Health Officer, and Health Minister Adrian Dix speaking publicly on Monday.
And that's our program for CFRO, The Pulse.
Your independent news show, reporting on the front lines in our community.
Every weekday, 7 a.m., here on Vancouver Co-op Radio.
Find our previous podcasts and interviews at thepulse.coopradio.org.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.